welcome back to the FitCast. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and I'm super pumped because I get to have someone on the show that has been to MBSC twice over the course of the last 2 years and has been so impactful that we have actually changed things in our program, and that's absolutely gigantic, and I'm super pumped to have on the show Anna Hartman. Anna, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing super good, and I'm really pumped to talk to you about this stuff because, like I just said, you know, you were just at MBSC for the second time. God, I don't know what's going on with the world, but like a month ago, right?
Yeah, just about.
And
just like maybe 3 weeks ago, yeah.
Okay, that sounds about right. I just never know these days. But you know, you swung into town, you got to stop by our gym and talk to us, and really, the first talk that you had about a year ago, like I was saying, really. This is like the impact that I have. Mike went out to a hardware store, bought a huge long wooden board, bought a bunch of Gorilla Glue, and glued a bunch of rocks to this super long board for our gym. On top
right.
of, on top of like also like filling his bathtub with rocks. So
yes,
that's maybe that's where we should start. But I should preface, like, you know, in terms of your past and like what you're doing now, like you're at Exos for a while, and now you're at doing your own thing with Movement Rev, which
yes.
MovementRev.com, and also you actually have a really great YouTube channel where you can. I know we're going to talk about like resting postures and things like that, so you know, people can always reference back to that, because I'm sure some of the stuff that we do talk about, a visual tool will probably be beneficial
for
you to understand this stuff. But I want to talk about, because this is the question that we get a lot at MBSC, and I'm never 100% sure on how to answer people, especially when they see, like at my house, I'm lucky, I live down by near the beach, so I just went down to the beach and threw a bunch of rocks in a box.
Oh, nice.
And
even
that's,
better.
Exactly, and that's what I use for, you know, when I'm standing on rocks while working at the computer or something like that. But help explain to the audience who might just think we sound crazy. Why should we be, you know, looking at whether it be creating a rock board or, you know, filling a box with some rocks? Like, why should we be doing that? What are the benefits of that? And like, what's going on neurologically to get these benefits?
Yeah, that has been, you know, same in my own body and my own life. Probably the biggest change in the last couple of years is seeing the value in spending some time on rocks and just actually giving my feet or our feet a life again. Our feet and hands are both really two important sensory organs. You know, just as much as our eyes and mouth and tongue and ears and nose are. To sense the environment around us, our hands and feet, I always tell my patients or athletes, you know, it's like a cat's whiskers, right? Like in order for the animal to get input of where it is, what's its surroundings like, you know, to not run into things, to be prepared for different sorts of environment, it's got the whiskers on its face, the little hairs between its paws. You know, our hands and feet are just like that. It's constantly giving our body information where we are in space, what kind of terrain we're walking on, you know, the temperature of the environment, the gravitational changes, those kinds of things. And what we've done over the years of society of putting shoes and socks on ourselves and giving ourselves artificial surfaces is we're taking 50% of that information out of our body. And you know, that it's very detrimental because it's the feet especially are the low back and pelvic floors, you know, information centers. It's that information from our feet are going directly into the muscles and the little supercomputers of our back that tells our spine where we are in space and then properly adjusts any positional needs within the vertebrae or activation patterns of the muscles in order for things to turn on to provide the stability. And so the thought process, you know, from Philip Beach, whose work this is, you know, even though we know more than ever about low back pain and disc injuries and nerve problems, you know, in terms of sciatica, that kind of thing, like there's tons of research on it, but yet it's still one of the most prevalent things that happens to people that makes them disabled. And, you know, and why? And, but if you look at the reliance upon shoes and socks and always covering our feet and, you know, paving all of our surfaces, it sort of matches that trend. As the more we get westernized, you know, the more we are choosing socks all the time and never really interacting with real nature, the more back pain we've had. And so it's just a return to sort of more of kind of where we came from and the emphasis or the need to spend time in nature. And sometimes that's a barrier for people. You know, if you live in a city, it's hard to get out into nature sometimes or just to find it in your day. And so bringing, making a rock mat, you know, whether it's like you guys did at MBSC with the balance beam or bringing the rocks in the bathtub with, or and put them in a boot tray in the office or the, of the house and putting it in places that you're already spending time standing or walking around, it's just bringing the nature inside. And then it's giving something really interesting for your feet to feel. And that's what your feet want. That's what our hands want. And you see this all the time in little kids, right? When I, it's always funny because when my patients bring their children into my office, you know, first they feel like, oh my gosh, is it okay to bring my kid in? And of course it is. You can, you know, if you need to bring your child with you, that's totally fine. And then they instruct the child to like sit in one spot and don't move. And but what does the kid do, right? He or she gets up and they start exploring their environment. And the way they start to explore the environment, they go to touch things. And the two areas of my office where the kids always go within the first 2 minutes of being in the office is I have in one corner a like a bin of different size balls, like massage balls and just different textured balls. They go and start playing with the balls. And then as soon as they get bored with the balls, they go over to the left corner of the room, which is where all my rocks are, and they start walking in the rocks. They do it without me telling them. They do it even despite their parents telling them not to. And if they're really young, the next thing they do with both of those items is put them in their mouths. And that's a reflex. And that's just like the body's way of, especially as a child, like exploring their environment. It's like they touch it and then they taste it. And so we have lost that childlike need to fulfill a curiosity of exploring our environment, and partly because we've put shoes and socks on our feet, and we give ourselves convenience and comfort and take away that curiosity piece. And so bringing rocks back in is just to bring that back in and to give ourselves a better idea of our environment. And whenever our body has a better idea for environment, it can plan how to move better. It can plan how to function better. It's more prepared for whatever tasks you put in front of it.
And this is, you know, again, like I said, you came in maybe a little bit over a year ago now. Again, it's just, it's tough with the time these days, but it like the best feedback that I guess we got was from Mike himself, where, you know, a lot of times we have people that will come in, and what we do is we do our best to, all right, let's try this. So let's see what happens and let's see if we can implement this into what we do with the, you know, like the 90 minute or 60 minute sessions that we had at MBSC. But, you know, Mike, you know, went home and got some rocks from his backyard and brought them inside. Right. And, you know, Mike is, if you don't follow Mike on a day-to-day basis or you don't talk to him personally, like he has dealt with back pain issues for years to the point where his sleep has actually been pretty terrible. So he was able to start doing just, you know, what I think it was like he started with like 10 minutes, you know, standing on the rocks. And like he actually, like his wife the next morning or something like that was like, Mike, what are you still doing in bed? Did you get up and did you, you know, go do some stuff and then come back to bed? He's like, no, I've actually, like I slept for 7 or 8 hours tonight, which never happens for him. So like that's really impactful stuff. And Like I even noticed for me, like my body, especially like I just came back from Germany, and like the first thing my body wanted to do besides sleep was like step on rocks, which is
isn't that funny? You like crave it after a while. It's very interesting.
Yeah. So for us, is it like a neurological response that we're getting from stepping on these rocks that are basically just like, again, our body's just really starving for feedback and it needs that feedback for like homeostasis? Like what's going on?
Yeah, it definitely needs the feedback for homeostasis. You know, our homeostasis is based on just that, like our body interpreting our environment and then adjusting to it. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to have a hard time adjusting if it's not getting a ton of information, right? And so it's just the more information you can provide your body, the better it can be resilient and heal itself and stay recovered and keep in its biological rhythms that help to maintain that balance. And you know, so you look at the areas where the sensory information is really rich, and the feet and the SI joint and the neck are just areas that have a ton of receptors in it. The other areas that have a ton of receptors are within the fascia. The fascia has 10 times more receptors, more sensory information in it than other parts in the body. And the other area that has a ton of receptors that really tap into the autonomic nervous system, which is the system that helps maintain our homeostasis, is the organs. All the organs, how they respond to the environment of pressure. Pressure within the cavities of our body, within the abdominal cavity and the thoracic cavity and the pelvic cavity, that pressure information is given back to the nervous system. And again, it's more information that helps the body know what the environment is like, so then knows how to adjust to it or balance it out. And so our feet are a very, very, there's a lot of fascia down there. There's a lot of joints in our feet, and there's a lot of small muscles in our feet. And so that's why you have a high concentration of receptors down there. There's also a lot of tactile, like touch nerve endings. And so a lot of little tiny nerves. So you're getting all the sensory information from the nerves. In terms of touch, the skin type stuff, you're getting the sensory information from the muscle spindles and all those small little muscles. And then you're getting the sensory information from all the joint receptors, because there's 33 joints in the foot. On top of that, we live on top of our feet. And so you're getting a lot of pressure information from those receptors. And I think sometimes that's what the more interesting surfaces help to do too, is it changes the pressure quite a bit more on different parts of our foot than the pressure that we feel in our shoes or the pressure that we feel on a really boring flat surface. Plus it's different. So that's the key, is difference. And you'll find, even after sitting on rocks, you need to switch out to more interesting rocks. You know, the rocks I started with 2 years ago, if I step on them now, it's not that interesting to my feet. And so I don't get as powerful response. So just like with any other training, right, you're always kind of adjusting your training as your body gets used to it. You need to change the stimulus. And so you make the rocks more interesting, which in the world of rocks means more jagged or sharper or smaller, like that the pressure increases. Or you switch from the glued ones to loose ones, because it gives your feet a little bit different. So yeah, it's definitely a neurological, you know, it's a neurological response, because that's where the relationship of all of our proprioceptors, our mechanoreceptors, all the little supercomputers within our tissues and our joints and nerves give feedback to the nervous system as a whole and tells the body how to adjust, whether it's adjust position, you know, so from a motor output, adjust position, or even adjust an emotional response or a hormonal response, again, based on our environment.
And the cool thing about this, even if you're like, this sounds nuts, is that all you got to do is go to your backyard, or your neighbor's backyard, steal a bunch of rocks and put them in a, like you said, like a box or put them in on a surface where you can actually, step on them and have them stay in place, and you can give it a shot. And you have like zero risk. There's zero financial risk and zero physical risk.
Yeah, it really is like that. I mean, the biggest risk I tell people is like, if you do it outside, just be aware, especially like here in Arizona, if you go outside and there's cactus needles, you know, like, yeah, you have a chance of that. You might, you know, step on something that punctures your foot. Hmm. But, so, you know, common sense, like, duh. And don't make it too painful. So if you're haven't, you know, taken your socks off for, you know, 10 years, you might want to start with some smoother rocks that are more comfortable and then work your way up. And everybody's going to be different. I am not finding like the small rocks are necessarily better to start with than the bigger rocks. It's very individual. So in my office for my clients, I have, you know, three or four different, examples in just using boot trays, of four or five different size rocks. And if they're thinking about doing one at their house or wherever, I have them test out each type of rock for their foot so they can see, you know, if they're going to go buy them or go find whose yard to steal them from, they know which type of rock they're looking for. Because the worst thing is to get rocks that you're not ready for, and then they're so uncomfortable and painful, you are either going to get hurt or you're just not going to want to do it. Because there's a fine line between interesting and want, it makes you want to touch it, and interesting, like not in, like not interesting, but painful and annoying. And no, why would I inflict that kind of pain on myself?
Right. So is there like a prescription that you would normally give people? Like, is it like, you know, 10 minutes a day or 10 minutes twice a day, but first thing in the morning, like whenever, you know, you're at your desk, or what is your general prescription for people to start implementing this?
My general prescription is to try to put it places that you're already standing, so you don't have to worry about carving out the 10 minutes a day or the 20 minutes a day, that it just kind of happens organically. That's like the best to do. And then, you know, with the general goal being, I think, minimum 20 minutes a day to start with, but not necessarily all in one, right? It doesn't have to be 20 minutes all in one standing, but like, make sure by the end of the day, you've spent a cumulative 20 minutes minimum a day. And then, you know, it's one of those things, more is better. So if you can do it more, great. But if you can't, like 20 minutes is pretty easy to commit to out of a 24-hour period, especially when you're putting it in places that you're already standing. I mean, that is the key. It is, you know, because then it's not like really a home exercise program that you're like, okay, well, between 12 o'clock and 12:30 at the beginning of my lunch hour, I'm going to do my exercises, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's easy to say, oh, I'll do it later. And so this way, if they're in your shower, if they're in front of your kitchen sink or in front of your oven or in front of your standing desk at work, or, you know, in front of the coffee pot at the office, whatever place you're going to be standing, like, you're forced to stand on it. Ideally, it's the place you're standing where you're going to be barefoot, because then there's the extra step of taking your shoes and socks off if you put it somewhere that you're not normally barefoot. But, you know, so it's like, anybody who works with clients and is trying to get them to make a change, you realize that you have to really make it like so convenient that it's like impossible not to do it. But then once you're, you know, just like Mike experienced and I experienced and you experienced, once you start doing it and you see the power of it, you crave it, and then you want to do it, and then you make the time for it, and then it's easy to figure out where to put it in.
Yeah. And I like I was saying, I just keep mine by my desk. So I don't do like a standing desk all day, but there'll be periods where I don't want to be sitting down and I want to be standing up. So that's when I will, you know, pull the box and step on some rocks and, you know, move my feet around a little bit and, you know, kind of do my homework that way.
Yeah, perfect.
So, you know, another thing I wanted to make sure that I talked to you a little bit about, and actually maybe I should hit on this first before we go in there, but I'm curious, like this kind of feedback that we're getting for our bodies, you know, we're getting it through, you know, stepping on the rocks for our feet. But I'm kind of curious, what are your thoughts on, obviously, you know, most people out there are going to be foam rolling as well. Does this give some like credence to having a foam roller that does have some like protrusions and is not just like a pure smooth surface in terms of feedback for our bodies when we're foam rolling?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think a lot of times the benefit people do get from foam rolling, especially at first, is just more of the sensory stimulation aspect of it.
Right.
So in that way, like, yeah, the more interesting the foam roll, you know, the more information that's coming in. Also, you know, the more likely somebody is to grab it in the first place. Mm. Like, I don't know if you've noticed that if you line up a bunch of foam
my
rolls.
My kids do it all the time. The kids in my groups, they want the weird looking one.
They want the weird looking one. Right. It's the curiosity piece. And like, that's just as an animal, that's what we're literally programmed to do is like, oh, that's interesting. I want to go explore that. And so that's the first, like, you know, that's our visual system exploring and being like, oh, that environment there looks like something I'm not used to. I want to explore it. And so, you know, just the fact that having the knobby foam roll, sometimes it, what makes you grab the foam roll and then use it, is nice. You know, I'm a big, some people know that I am not a huge, like, lover of deep tissue. Like, you know, I've gone full circle in my career as a clinician and, used to like beat the crap out of people from a manual therapy standpoint. And it was painful and people would squirm away on the table and, you know, well up with tears. And I have experienced that as a patient myself. And, you know, did things change? Things changed, but I felt, you know, it's like, gosh, I always had a constant like battle in my head of like, does it have to create this much pain to like get somebody right. better? Like, and so, you know, the more I've learned, and especially with the adding the Baral Institute manual therapies into my toolbox, is the more specific I can get with identifying what really is the problem with someone, the more I realize that the painful modalities are probably not doing is like they're really high risk, meaning they create a lot of pain with not as good of reward as that could be happening. And that if you get more specific and if you, as you become more aware of your body, even as a movement practitioner, or even as somebody just moving your body, the more aware you can get, the more in tune you can figure out about what you really need. And you realize that you can use more gentle, soft tissue mobilization techniques and actually have better, more long lasting results than the deep tissue, you know, leave bruises and hurt sort of modalities. And so, you know, that's why it's like a catch 22 of the type of foam rollers with the knobbies is sometimes the knobbies come with more pressure. And I don't necessarily think that's a good idea. Always a good idea. In some places it is, and in some people it is. But it's like, again, it's nice to have a different, if you're going to use soft tissue mobilization, which I think, you know, people should, it's nice to have a plethora of different type of things to pick from, right? So you're not always grabbing the really hard, invasive tool, that you might be starting with something a little, you know, more comfortable. And sometimes that is harder to find. I just saw the Melt Method foam roll, and it's, you know, her stuff is softer because it's more about fascial hydration, and but it has a texture to it too. And just like a little kid, I saw it in a corner of my client's little Pilates room, and I was like, ooh, that's interesting. I want to feel that. I want to touch that. And then I grabbed it and I started rolling on it. And so it's like, I never really foam roll on my own, but just the fact that that looked interesting and felt pretty good, I was like, let's try it out.
All right. I think we got like a really good, like if you guys ever come out to MBSC, like we actually have like a, it's like the Matrix, where they say like we need a lot of guns and we have all these different kinds of foam rollers at our disposal, whether it be like PVC pipes or, you know, your standard black foam rollers. Some things are a little bit softer. We have the AccuMobility ones. We have the weird ass looking ones too. So we have a wide range for people to choose from when it comes to that stuff. And maybe I should probably do a better job at like getting away from the PVC pipe at all times and going towards something that's a little bit more interesting for myself.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, it's just different. And I think, you know, maybe the answer in that standpoint too, is just mix it up. Like, right. Don't always grab the same one, like try it out, because that in itself makes it interesting for our, receptors.
So. Yeah, we get, I know, like we just get so much into a routine of doing this stuff that we just kind of like, especially when it comes to like the warm up, we just want to get it over with. We just want to go like train and stuff. So I'm sure we could all do a better job at making sure we mix things up a little bit. I want to ask you a little bit about breathing, because this is another thing that has obviously been a major change to what we do at MBSC, but you also see it kind of, you know, really making an impact on the rest of the industry, where people are starting to understand the benefits of diaphragmatic breathing and making sure that we take the time to do that before we train, or even on a daily basis. So you actually talked about this quite a bit when you were at our gym a couple of weeks ago. I was wondering if you could discuss, you know, the ways that we could, or maybe we should even take a bigger step back, because I think the last time I even talked about this was with Michael Mullen from PRI, came on to talk a little bit about it. But, you know, like, why should we be doing this diaphragmatic breathing stuff? Like, is what are the benefits that we are getting? Are there actual structural changes going on, or is it a nervous system thing, or is it a combination of both?
Yeah, it's definitely a combination of both. And you know, why people should be doing breathing in general, or like having some sort of awareness around breathing, because breathing is one of those rhythms that is like, like directly related to homeostasis for our body. So, it's important to focus on those rhythms. So one of the other rhythms that is important for homeostasis is the sleep cycle. So I think people talk about sleep hygiene quite a bit, right? And do a lot of things to study it and monitor it, and, you know, take supplements to help with it. And, you know, so I think over the years, people have accepted how important sleep is from a rhythm standpoint in our body. And I think that concept has been lost with the breath. And there's been the great, you know, here's the thing. It's like people are talking about breathing, and people are starting to do more breathing and see how powerful it can be as an adjunct to what they're doing in the weight room or what they're doing in the rehab, you know, the training room. But I think they're missing like the most powerful piece of it, and it is that the rhythmical part of it. And that is the homeostasis piece, you know. So, you know, I'm a big, you know, kind of believer in more the osteopathic realm of like the body can heal itself, and it has this really intelligence, this awareness to it, that if you allow it to do its thing naturally, then it will come into balance. And so most of the time, especially in the industry of strength and conditioning and performance and sport, we are so used to be forceful with stuff. Like lifting weights inherently is about force, like creating force and moving things around, right? But when it comes to the body in most people's minds truly don't like to be pushed around, right? If somebody pushes you, you push back, right? You don't do what they say. We have this natural like tendency to like put our brakes on and be like, whoa, what are you trying to do? And so when we're tapping into breath just as a mechanical, trying to get the diaphragm to be in a certain position to create a certain amount of stability, or to mobilize our rib cage in a certain way, are you going to get results? Yes, of course, because you're breathing. But if you work on breathing in a rhythmical way, if you're focusing on breathing as a rhythm and moving on that rhythm, and sort of tapping into that, you're not only making those mechanical changes, right? That like the PRI group talks about and the DNS people talk about, you're not only getting the change of getting a little bit more influence from the diaphragm as a stabilizer and getting more mobilization in the thoracic spine, but then you're also tapping into that homeostasis piece. And that in itself, when people come into balance, a lot of the tightnesses that they were trying to eliminate in the first place just sort of melt away, because those tightnesses were a reaction to a feeling, the body feeling like it was threatened. And mm-hmm. so it went into protection mode. And so in itself, when you're trying to force the body to do something, it goes into protection mode. And so when you go with the flow, right, when you go with the rhythm, you are less likely to be in protection mode. So you get more mobility, you get better stability automatically, because now the muscles can be stabilizers. Because when they're protectors, they will not be stabilizers and they will not be locomotors. Mm-hmm. They're just going to be protectors. And the muscles are really, at the end of the day, they're kind of the dummy of the body, and they're the security guard. And the things that are important are the organs and the, you know, which are the nerves and the blood vessels within our arms and legs. And so if you're trying to force mobility somewhere that's going to create bad tensions or compressions around the vascular, neurovascular structures, then the muscles as the security guard get really tight and protective. And the security guard would rather get hurt than let the artery or nerve get hurt. And so it will let you beat the crap out of it with a foam roller, or it will let you, you know, tear it that you're stretching it so much, or like, you know, like even just an activity, it's going to be the thing that tears, not the nerve. And so, I feel like when you're doing the breathing more from a rhythmical standpoint, focusing on the rhythm of the breath, which is sort of what I took you guys through in the lab, you tap into that inherent piece and you come a different.
Hey, this is Kevin. We had some Skype problems, so there will be some overlap for the next like 30 seconds to 1 minute. So we might cover things twice just for a couple seconds. So bear with us. Skype doesn't always work. Let's get back to it.
In the lab, you know, the lab that I was tapping into more of the rhythm of the breath. And so when you do that, you take the body out of protective mode, and then it's going to be more likely to do the things that require the stability, to have the mobility, to be prepared for the movement. So then when you go and you're wanting to ask it something that would have felt forceful in the beginning, now it's not feeling forceful to the body anymore, and it's more likely to go ahead and do it. So it's just kind of coming around in a different direction of going with the flow, getting the body feeling like it's in a comfortable environment, so that it's not threatened. The nerves and the arteries can move freely within the tissues. So then the muscles just do what they're supposed to do, which is have mobility and provide stability.
So, for you know, again, people who are listeners, they might have not heard of you know, these breathing, I guess, would you call them like drills, like breathing drills that you could be doing or should be doing before training? I guess my question on top of that is, like, how do you like to, again, like prescribe that for people? It's like we try to do our best to get about, you know, five, we call them like just like five belly breaths at MBSC before we start going and rolling and all that stuff. But yeah. What do you think for like the general population, just to make sure that they're covering their bases, what should they be doing?
I think just everybody, general pop athletes, whoever, it should be whenever you're wanting to talk about breath and start with a more breathing exercise like you're describing, is to actually, yeah, start with this rhythmical breath first, because that gets you in a more balanced state to begin with. So just like you would want somebody to have pretty good posture before you loaded them to do a squat, it's right. The same thing. So get their rhythm and balance, and then ask them to then move from there. And so if you're doing belly breath because you're wanting to facilitate the three-dimensional rib cage movement, or because you're trying to get them in the zone of apposition, they're going to be more likely to do it after you've done the balancing rhythm breath. And so the rhythm breath is just, you know, I think most people would agree that most people are kind of stuck in the sympathetic nervous system state of fight or flight, just because of the general like response to to our daily stresses in life.
Totally.
And so it would be easy then to tell people to exhale completely and then wait for their inhale breath to come on its own. And then just do a few of those, like, you know, 10 breaths like that, or 6 to 8 breaths like that. And so the easy way I can get people to exhale all the way, because a lot of times what will happen is you'll tell people to exhale all the way and they'll go like this. It'll sound like,
right.
And that's it. And so it's like, okay, no, exhale all the way. So what I do is I tell people to do a ha breath, which comes from some more of like the Pilates side of things, which sounds like this. And let it drain out. And at the end of it, I ask them to spell their name or spell their child's name or spell their spouse's name. And if they don't spell the whole name, that's fine. What I'm trying to get them to do is most people don't exhale completely. Mm-hmm. And so by spelling, it forces the rest of the air out. And then I ask them to just wait patiently for their inhale breath. Like, that is something that is guaranteed. As long as you are alive, your inhale breath will come. You don't have to tell it to come. And so, in fact, when you tell it to come, it sort of is more connected to the stressful response, right? Because mm-hmm. if you get scared, what do? You take a breath. You go, right? And so if I'm cueing people if I'm cueing people to inhale, then I'm instantly cueing their stress. And so that's why I only cue the exhale. And I tell people to wait for the inhale. And for people who are used to being very controlling, it's a very high anxiety moment sometimes, especially initially between that exhale breath and the inhale breath. And I mean, and that is so powerful to get people to realize in that moment, it's okay. Like it's okay to not be in control and things are going to happen the way they're supposed to be. I think just psychologically and then neurologically, mechanically, that is like the sweet spot. If they can be patient in that moment, it instantly switches us to our rhythmical, balanced state of homeostasis, or our body working towards homeostasis.
I got like 2 more questions for you before we wrap up, and it's already gone by super quick. But I think for the people that might be listening to this, whether they're coaches or whether they're people that just say, you know, love to train and like to do it the best way possible. What do you find to be the recommendations that you're giving to people across the board with what they could be doing to just live a healthier life or better prepare themselves for the rigors of, you know, getting into the weight room and lifting?
I think what prepares you for the rigors of the weight room is the same that prepares you for the rigors of the rest of life. Right? Like if you're not prepared for one, you're not prepared for the other. And I really think that it comes down to two things that can both be summed up as environment. The environment, being aware of the environment outside of our body and being aware of the environment inside our body. And so both of those, you tend to come with each other. So being aware outside of our environment is, like taking your shoes and socks off, going outside, paying attention to people who are talking to you, like getting off of your smartphone, you know, like stop staring at your screen, you know, stop thinking about what you have to do tomorrow and just like be in the moment a little bit more. And in order to then sense the environment better, often most of us have to kind of go within and calm down the crazy monkey mind. And first, in order to, you know, so you have to go change the internal environment before you can change the external environment. And so changing the internal environment, you know, that's where that tapping into that rhythmical breathing is so important. Or it can be journaling, or it can be meditating. It can just, you know, just having some quiet time with yourself, you know, which some people are like, oh, well, I read, or oh, well, I watch TV. That's not quiet time with yourself. Like quiet time with yourself is focusing on your breath or labeling your thoughts, not judging them, or just sitting watching the sunrise or the sunset, product or enjoying your cup of coffee, right? Like my sister and I always have this conversation. I say, what was one thing you did for yourself today? You know, she's a mom, she's, you know, a wife, she works. And so it's like, what did you do for yourself today? And she goes, well, I ate lunch. Does that count? And I'm like, I don't know. How did you eat lunch? And she's like, well, in the car, in the parking lot, the grocery store, on the way to go get Sophie from school. And I was like, does that sound like it was for yourself? And she's like, no. And I was like, okay. She goes, well, I had a cup of coffee this morning. I was like, okay, how did you do that? And she's like, oh, like in my to-go mug out the door into the car. And I'm like, okay, yeah, so that doesn't count, right? Like having a cup of coffee for yourself can be a very internal check in with your environment. If you do it sitting down, taking a breath, enjoying the taste of the coffee, right? Like it's all about the awareness piece.
Totally.
And so it's like easy to tell people they have to be aware, right? Oh, it's just one more thing you have to do. But it's like, it can be like you don't have to meditate. Like meditation doesn't have to be for everybody, just like the weight room doesn't have to be for everybody. Mm-hmm. But, and sometimes the weight room is the place that people are meditating. That is the place that you are taking care of yourself. But there's a difference in the weight room if you're there or not, right? We've all seen or probably experienced the moment when we're lifting weights and we're not really there. Mm-hmm. That's not you, that you did not do anything good for yourself in that moment. If anything, you just put yourself in an environment that you're high risk for getting hurt because you're not paying attention,
right?
But if you're doing that squat, whether it's a 500-pound squat or a body weight squat, if you are mindful, if you are in your body, if you're paying attention to what it feels like in your body, then that is a moment that you're doing something good for yourself. But if you're just putting the weight on and you're just going through the motion, then that's not good for you. And so it's just the awareness piece of how things feel inside you and then how you are in the or your surroundings that I think is the key to good performance in life and good performance in sport and in the weight room for sure.
Awesome, awesome stuff. And then the last thing I want to ask you about is have you found a good way to deal with the stress and the rigors of travel? Because you travel a ton.
Yeah, and, I do travel a ton.
And like, and again, like, you know, you're with the like professional athletes that you're working with as well. Like that's something that they need to, you know, deal with. I mean, we're usually the ones flying economy class, so it's a little bit rougher for us. But you know, still, I was just kind of curious because I'm always looking for those tips. I know I'm sure there's a lot of people like that's just what we do today. A lot of you know people are on planes once a month, you know, 3-4 times a month. How have you found better ways to deal with that and just to make sure that you can kind of like hit reset when you land?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the better I am in sticking to my habits of doing the little rituals to take care of myself, no matter where I am, whether it's in a hotel or a friend's house or, you know, my house or in whether I'm in San Diego or Buffalo or Japan or Boston, right? Like, just sticking with that is I think key. And then, you know, little kind of life hacks I do. I do not go on a flight over 1 hour without my compression socks on. I feel like that is a huge game changer in terms of not having jet lag and feeling ready. So, you know, I use, you know, I've tried various types of different compression socks. I prefer the ones with the toe socks. You know, because again, I like my feet to be free. So I want my toes to have individual compression as well. So I use the Injinji compression socks. And then I am a little bit hippy dippy sometimes. And I use essential oils. I use this essential oil blend called Balance from doTERRA. And it's supposed to be for jet lag. And I swear by it. Like I used it. I went to Japan and worked at baseball camp last January. Actually, right before the MBSC winter seminar. So I was, I left Phoenix. I went to Japan. My flight was delayed in San Francisco. So I had to stay the night in San Francisco. Got to Japan the next day at like midnight. Got to my place where I was staying in Okinawa at like 1 a.m. put the Balance on my feet. Went to bed. Woke up at 6 a.m. Felt great. went, had breakfast, started the day at 8. I treated baseball players until like 4 o'clock that day and had dinner and then went to bed at 10:30. No joke. The whole week in Japan, I had normal sleep. I went to bed at like 10. I woke up at 6 and I worked. I felt very myself, very on, had great results with the athletes. And like at one point, the other staff members were looking at me at breakfast and I was like, how are you, like, what time do you wake up? I'm like, 6. They're like, how are you not up at like 4 a.m. and 3 a.m. like everybody else? I'm like, I have no idea. I think it's this oil, but I don't know what it is. I'm going to go with it. And the whole week in Japan, I felt great. And then I flew back to Phoenix. I was overnight in Phoenix. And then I got on a plane and flew to Boston. And then I spoke at the conference in Boston. And then I flew back to Phoenix. And then I worked. And I never once had jet lag the whole time. And so that was when I was like, whoa, okay, a couple things are here. One, I journaled every day. And journaling is one of my rituals. I meditated every day, one of my rituals. I use the balance and I use the compression socks. And that it seems to be like the key in getting some sort of movement during the day. And that's something that now, like my schedule is I travel to Buffalo every Sunday and then back to Phoenix on Tuesday, sometimes LA. And then I work on somebody and then go to the next town, either Phoenix or San Diego. And then I go back to Buffalo. And so it's like, I do this weird triangle. And so I literally am on a plane 4 or 5 times a week. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. I've been doing it since August and it's getting this week. I texted somebody last night and was like, okay, I need some rest and I need some rocks is what I told them. And, but for the most part, I feel pretty darn good and I have not gotten sick and I don't really have jet lag. I get pretty good night's sleep. And that's the key is like when I get, when it's time to sleep, it's time to sleep. And I honor that. And there's been times I've had to tell my athlete like, hey, I know you want to see me at 9 o'clock, but I didn't go to bed till 3 a.m. And so I'm going to need to not see you till 11 o'clock or whatever. Like, and he's good about knowing that when I say that, I mean it. And that when he gets a rested version of me, I'm better. And so, you know, it's just, again, like, I think I've written about this on one of my newsletters or blogs is this, like, when you are constantly checking in with your internal environment and listening to the crazy monkeys and not letting them rule the world, you're okay with making decisions like that of putting yourself first because you know it's really the best for everybody else. And so a constant, I think that's key really, is a constant internal check-in of like, am I aligned with what I know I need to do to make myself feel good? And when that gets out of balance, then I start feeling the effects of the flights and I start feeling the effects of the poor nutrition choices and that kind of thing. And so I really think that's the key to the jet lag, to the life, to performance, is having rituals to stick with, to check in with your internal environment and give yourself some self-love and, you know, commit to yourself as much as you commit to everything else in your life.
I totally did not realize that you were, I wasn't at the winter seminar this past year because I was in Tokyo.
Oh, there you go.
So, I mean, obviously we didn't cross paths or anything like that, but that's just funny. And I think you just convinced me to buy a $50 pair of socks.
Right. Yeah. They're, I love them. I've used a couple brands and I texted somebody the other day too and was like, I swear these are better than the last brand I used. So,
well, it's just like, I'm looking at, less than 3 months I'm heading back to Tokyo. So like anything I can do to avoid just the nightmare of jet lag when I get there.
Yeah. I really think the compression socks are a big deal, you know? And like I said, even in domestic travel, if it's over an hour flight, I put them on. And people must think I have like a little ritual when I get down on the plane, right? Like I like put certain things in the seat back and I take my flip-flops off or my whatever I wore on the plane and I pull my compression socks on. And
well, you got to do it because like you're saying, like when I go out to Tokyo, like I'm teaching for 3 days. It's not like I'm on there for vacation. Like I need to perform. Like I can't just go to sleep.
Yeah, you can't, and you can't, you don't, well, even on vacation, you don't want to waste a one whole day dealing with your jet lag.
Right. Like,
and so that's so important. And, the other thing too, on the flights is, if it's an airline that kind of sticks to their standards, allegedly I heard that they're supposed to be on longer flights, they're supposed to be offering you water once every hour. And so, basically I try to honor that. Like if they're, every time they offer me water, I accept and drink it.
Exactly.
And if they're not very good at accepting, like at offering it, then I'm trying to pay attention and drink at least, you know, 8 ounces of water every hour on a flight. Just to, again, make sure you don't get dehydrated and just things, you know, it's so easy, yeah, to like fall asleep or do whatever, but.
Yeah, those planes are dry as hell.
Yeah. Too. And oftentimes the plane is where I do my meditation and my journaling quite a bit. So that's a good spot too.
That's some awesome tips. And I'm gonna take full advantage of those. And I'm still a little bit crazy, like I said, when I go to those, you know, it's a 14-hour flight from Boston to Tokyo. So it's, you know, I'm packing 2 liters of water plus getting, you know, every time I see them bringing that tray of water around, I'm grabbing one of those.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Awesome calls. Well, I will, I think it's maybe best to wrap up there. We definitely have some stuff that we can hit back on, but I think what would be cool is if the audience, like, you know, if you have some stuff, you know, start bringing, you know, the questions for Anna back to me at kevin@thefitcast.com, and we can definitely set up a follow-up for you guys to ask some more questions. And, you know, like I said, we didn't even get to talk about like resting postures and also just like, you know, office setups and stuff like that. So that's stuff we can definitely hit on again. But for people that are, you know, interested and they want to get right after it, there's two things that I recommend doing initially, and that's going on YouTube.com. Just search for Anna Hartman at the top of the search box, and you'll get the Movement Rev YouTube channel there, where you can check out a bunch of the resting postures. You can check out, you know, some rock mat stuff on there, and also Movement Rev. .com is the website where you can get some more information about what Anna does and the services offered and all that good stuff. Aside from that, do you have anything coming up that people should keep an eye out for, or you know, other stuff that they should check out?
You know what? I am in San Diego the end of February, I believe. I'm teaming up with Jesse Stenslin and the Feet Freaks and doing a little hands-on or feet-on, I guess, workshop in San Diego. We're kind of figuring out the location still. And I'm also end of February speaking in Tokyo. Don't have the details of that just yet, but as soon as I do, I usually put all that kind of stuff on my Facebook page, and hopefully one of these days soon, phase two of my website will have a calendar, events, that kind of thing. And then I'm also going to be doing an online like distance mentorship in 2017. Nice. And that will be online, on the phone, online content, that kind of thing. Just kind of a whatever people want to learn, but you know, all of my stuff. And again, all that information will be advertised on my Facebook. Newsletter type stuff. So if you connect with me there, you'll probably see it.
Fantastic. Well, you guys got some homework to do and some things to check out. And like I said, if you do have any follow-up questions, start getting them in kevin@thefitcast.com, or you can find, you know, both of us on Twitter and all that stuff, or on Facebook. You can start getting in the questions. We'll absolutely do a follow-up. But Anna, this is absolutely outstanding to get you on here finally and to talk about this stuff. I think it's going to be, you know, super valuable for the people out there, no matter, you know, where they're coming from this or what they are doing when it comes to the gym. But again, thank you so much, and hopefully you have an opportunity to rest up this holiday season before you know the travel kicks back up.
Thank you. You too. It was good to talk. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you again. And for everyone else, don't forget to check out fitcast.network for all the upcoming episodes. And again, I appreciate all the Patreon support at patreon.com/thefitcast. It means so much to have your support on there. And until next time, I think we should probably all go, you know, whether it's outside, go to our driveway, wherever you need to do, get some rocks, and let's stand on them for a little bit and see what happens. Let us know what happens, and we will see you next time.